p.m. Central Time, Keeping the Faith with Steve Shoemaker is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Lois Steinberg, and we're going to be talking together about the practice of yoga. Welcome, Lois.
Thank you.
But before we get into that, because of the emergency situation in Turkey this weekend with the bombing of two Jewish synagogues in Istanbul, we have a special guest, Paul Weichel. Am I saying your name right, Paul?
Weichsel.
Thank you. Who is a recently retired math professor at the University of Illinois, where he's taught for 43 years, who is co-chair of the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Jewish Federation of Champaign County. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here. And could you give us some details about this horrible event in Istanbul?
Well, as far as we know, apparently there were two bombs that were placed clearly directed at the synagogues. As far as we know now, there were approximately 20 people who were killed in these events and about 170 injured. I should point out that far more non-Jews were injured and killed in these episodes than were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clearly directed at these two synagogues.
At the two synagogues. Yes. And this is not just an isolated occurrence, unfortunately.
It would be tragic enough if it were simply isolated, but this is another instance of an escalating series of events that have taken place throughout the world, especially in Europe and other places as well, where synagogues, Jewish schools, cemeteries have been targeted for either desecration or bombing or arson and things of that sort.
Now, as a member of the Jewish community here in Champaign-Urbana, what can local people do? I know when you talked with me yesterday about this, you were hoping that religious leaders of different religious traditions might respond over the weekend, and I know the imam at the mosque was eager to do that and include prayers at the mosque, and I know Catholic priests and Protestant ministers, as I called them, were very, wanting to do something. And what can be done?
Well, first of all, I want to say how gratified all of us have been at the response we've gotten from so many parts of the religious community and others as well. We are trying to find a way to give the community, both the Jewish community and the non-Jewish community, an opportunity to express themselves, to express our outrage and our sadness and our condolences to the families of the people who are injured. And so we're planning several events. First of all, this Friday night at Sinai Temple, there will be a service in which we are still in the planning stage, of course, but part of the service will be a memorial to those people who were killed in these attacks and in other attacks which were anti-Semitic in nature. We hope to have members of the various religious communities in Champaign come and worship with us and express their own sense of sadness and outrage at these events.
So that's this Friday evening at Sinai Temple at 7:30. Sinai Temple, for those who don't know, is very near the corner of Duncan and Windsor Road in Southwest Champaign.
Also, the director of the Hillel Foundation is formulating a letter which will be available for students to sign at Hillel all during this coming week.
Joel Schweitzer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that letter will eventually be sent. Copies will be sent to the Turkish ambassador to the United Nations, the Turkish consulate in Chicago, and to the president of Turkey, expressing our concern and our condolences to those people who were killed in these attacks.
And at this point, it's not clear at all where those car bombs came from, who did it.
No, it's not at all clear. One can surmise, of course, but I'm certainly not going to speculate at that. Mm-hmm. The fact is that this is part of a pattern. What's very disturbing about this to us is the fact that things have happened in the interim which have suggested that there's support for this in many, many quarters. For example, there was a lot of press given to the fact that the ambassador, or the prime minister, rather, of Malaysia made a rather anti-Semitic speech to a group, an international congress that he was attending. And what was disturbing more than simply the statements that he made was the fact that there seemed to be very little response from others. Mm. In particular, representatives of the European Union were asked to comment on what he had said, and they simply refused to do so.
Well, thank you very much for coming and telling us what some of the local possible responses to this tragedy can be.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Let me just remind folks that we've just heard from Professor Paul Weichsel, a math professor at the university, about the special service, an interfaith service this Friday at the Sinai Temple at 7:30 in response to the synagogue bombing in Istanbul over this weekend, where 23 people were killed and many injured, including the rabbi of the largest synagogue in Turkey. That'll be at Sinai Temple in Champaign, Illinois at 7:30 this coming Friday. And the temple is near the corner of Duncan and Windsor Road. That's this coming Friday, the 21st of November at 7:30. Here on Keeping the Faith today, we've had this special announcement, but let's now get to the announced topic. And our guest is Lois Steinberg, and we're talking about the practice of yoga. Yoga is known as one way to deal with stress when people are feeling really stressed out from national and international issues. Is yoga actually helpful for that?
Well, it's interesting. When 9/11 happened, mm-hmm. A lot of my students were looking forward to coming to the yoga class, where there could be some sense of community and gathering together of like minds. And, you know, these were my regular students that felt like they wanted to come to yoga, you know, to get over, you know, to deal with what was happening. But what was interesting was that some students who were just new to yoga, you know, from the introductory level, they felt like it was wrong to go to a yoga class at that time, that they felt like doing something else. So they didn't quite get it yet in terms of how yoga could make them a better person and come together with other people in that sense. So it depends, yeah.
Well, I know with that question, for some of our listeners, I probably jumped ahead because they may not even know what yoga is. Tell us about yoga in general.
In general, yoga is an ancient art, science, philosophy, and a practice. And it dates back to the Indus Valley civilization, where they found coins with yoga postures. And there's even some evidence that it dates back to Egyptian times.
Now, how long ago is that?
Well, at least 5,000 years ago. And yoga has been an oral tradition up until 2,500 years ago. Pat, the important thing about yoga is that you have a teacher who teaches you the practices of yoga, and it gets passed down to the student, and that student may go on to become a teacher. And at some point, 2,500 years ago, the Yoga Sutras, which are 196 terse aphorisms on the philosophy of yoga, was actually codified, written down 2,500 years ago. So it's a very old practice that lives to this day.
Now, I noticed when you said what yoga is, you said, you know, an art, a science, a practice, but you didn't say religion. Does yoga become a religion for some practitioners?
Yoga cannot be put in the category of universal religions. It's a category of religion. It's a universal religious practice of culturing of the body, the mind, the self, the individual soul. Yoga is a culturing for a progression to a better life, a more discriminating understanding of knowledge. It can't be termed as a sectarian religious practice.
So people who might be themselves Jewish or Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim could practice yoga?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, if you want to improve yourself in your own religion, you know, your sectarian religion, yoga can enhance that to make you a better Muslim, a better Hindu, a better Jew, a better Christian. It makes you a better person.
Well, I want to question that and get into that in a little bit, but let's make sure that our listeners kind of know what happens when someone learns yoga. And we have to be inventive here because this is radio.
Okay.
I have to paint some word pictures. What happens if somebody walks into your class and says, okay, you're a yoga teacher, teach me yoga. What do you do?
Well, we start with the concreteness of the body. You know, we're given this body, and we approach it through the physical culturing of the body. How to stand on your own 2 feet. A lot of people think that yoga, you know, is standing on your head and getting into these funny contorted positions, the postures of yoga. But actually, you learn to stand on your own 2 feet and to become aware and sensitive to the sensations of what you're standing on. I'll ask you to lift your kneecaps, tighten your thighs, and you may not even know how to do that, and I'll ask you to do it more.
Do you touch your students?
Beginner students, I don't adjust so much. I will give a verbal instruction, and if they're not getting it, I'll repeat it again a different way.
And do you show them?
I'll show them. The pose is demonstrated. They see it. They do it. I'll show them.
What do people wear?
Well, they wear shorts, T-shirts, tights. It's best if they wear something where I can see the definition of their legs, because I do work on teaching them alignment of their body and balance. So, you know, if somebody's uncomfortable with wearing something like that, you know, they're welcome to wear loose clothing, but I won't be as effective in teaching them if I can't see how to correct them.
But there isn't a required dress.
Well, you have to have bare feet.
Ah, why?
Yeah. Well, you're going to spread your toes, and you're going to lift your arches, and you're going to stand on your feet, as I said. So, you know, a lot of people have foot problems, actually. You know, you can get swelling of the feet, pain in the bottom of the feet, especially if you stand on your feet all day. So you have to work the feet.
Do doctors take this?
I've had physicians, you know, come through my class. I have a couple of physicians now in my class. I'm actually working with a physician in Philadelphia on a research project on how yoga can be helpful for the breath. So, yeah, doctors take this.
Chiropractors?
I've had a chiropractor take. I mean, people come from all walks of life. It's for everybody.
I heard you use the word adjustment, right, and how people stand.
You know, yoga can give you, you can, when you become, you know, when you're a student for a while, you can learn how to use yoga to treat your own aches and pains. So certain yoga poses, especially in the beginning, you might hear some pops and cracks in your spine, but eventually, actually, those would go away as you become aligned and balanced. You shouldn't keep popping and cracking. Huh. So, you know, yoga can be used to, there's an expression actually, yoga can help you to cure that which you cannot endure and help you to endure that which you cannot cure. So yoga is used as a tool for health, but that's not its only practice.
And I want to get into what you were implying about spiritual and improvement and things like that in just a moment. But let me encourage listeners to consider giving us a call. This is a live weekly call-in program here on WILL AM 580. We're located in Champaign-Urbana, and local callers may reach us by punching in the buttons 333-9455, that's 333-WILL. Other listeners may call us toll-free anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL is a toll-free call. I'm sure we'll have callers soon, but let me find out a little bit about how you got into this. Now, first of all, people pay to take these classes, right, to learn how to do yoga?
Right.
And do you support yourself by being a yoga teacher, or do you do something else as well?
Well, I was a student for a very long time of yoga, and I actually started teaching too early, probably. I actually started when I was 14. I saw it on the television and thought it was really cool. And ever since then, I would roll out of bed and do yoga every day. And I met somebody who whose teacher was in India, my current teacher. And I didn't know that this man was alive. I knew of his book.
Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a suburb of Chicago.
Okay.
And I came, and so I started when I was 14, and I came down to the university here, actually, and I kept up practicing yoga just through a book and not really knowing what I was doing. But I met somebody who knew what they were doing, and they taught me everything they knew, and they also said, okay, you're going to start teaching. And I said, no, I'm not. And they said, yes, you are.
That was here in Champaign.
That was here in Champaign.
Okay.
Yeah, and we started in her apartment.
But then who was the teacher you eventually ended up with?
Well, eventually BKS Iyengar, who is still alive today. He's 85 years old, living in India, and he's still practicing and teaching, and nobody can even get close to what those practices are. Mm-hmm. And he's still willing to try to bring us up to his level. So I actually go every year to study with him, as well as his children, Geeta Iyengar and Prashant Iyengar.
Oh. And do you have another livelihood as well, another way to make a living?
I actually used to have another life as a mental health specialist.
Ah.
Many years ago, there was an Adler's Own Center in town, an institution for emotionally disturbed children, and it was a leftover of the Kennedy era of social programs, and when Reagan came into power, that kind of literally died, and that was when I went to India for a year.
But so you have a degree in psychology?
But then after coming back from India, I returned to graduate school in nutritional sciences and got a PhD.
Oh.
All the while, I was teaching and studying yoga. It was always a big part of my life. I never thought that I would be doing it full-time, but in a sense, I was always doing it full-time. And then at some point in my life, I said, I am doing yoga full-time, and goodbye everything else, although I still keep my finger in the pie in terms of research, but I focus on yoga and its research.
We do have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Lois Steinberg. Yes, go ahead.
Hello. Is it me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, hi. I'm on the way, and I just I'm listening to this program. I've been a student there. I just want to make one statement and then a question. A statement is this, that, or a comment is this, that I've been learning yoga for a long time now, and what I have learned and what has been very useful is to be able to look inward in your own body, your own skeleton. You see the way our teacher Lois teaches us, that is what has taught me, and this alignment business, what she's talking about, is to be able to look inward, able to position yourself, and it comes the way she teaches. It is really awesome, and it has helped me a lot. And the other thing is, I just wanted to ask either one of you to define religion, if you could. Thank you.
Go right ahead, Lois.
Oh, Steve, I think I should leave that question to you. Well, that's a vast subject, and so is yoga. You know, for me, there's religion and then there's religiosity. Religion would be, sectarian, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism. And, you know, it's something that you're born into or you can convert into. In terms of religiosity, there's a Sanskrit word called dharma, and it's a science of duty. And this is something that goes outside the realm of sectarian religion. It has more of a vast subject. It's cosmic in nature. And I'm not sure I want to get into this more, and certainly I would actually pass this question back to you.
Well, I think the easiest definition of religion is it's one of the things that we talk about on Keeping the Faith. So let's go to our next question. We have someone waiting on line two. Yes, go ahead with our guest, Lois Steinberg.
Yes, yes, this is me, and I've met Lois. Anyway, I wanted to ask two questions. One is, can you do it any time of your life? I have MS, and I'm 67. That's the question. Can you do it any time in your life? And two, I wanted to make this comment. I think this is a wonderful way to reduce stress, but can you comment on both of those? And I'll hang up on and listen to what you have to say, Lois. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Yes, you can do yoga at any time in your life, especially in the Iyengar method. And there's many different methods
of
yoga.
Would you spell that for us?
Iyengar. That's named after my teacher. He's known for making it very accessible to people through any stage in life, young, old, even young people, you know, may have difficulties doing some of the classic yoga postures. And so there's props that can support you in the poses so you can get the benefit of the pose for whatever is ailing you. And even, you know, yoga can even help you to come to the end of your life, especially with the breathing practices. You know, the first thing you get is your breath, and the last thing that goes is your breath. And there's breathing exercises that help you to hang on to that breath and improve the quality of your life, even at the very end. So yoga is very adaptive. However, you have to really go to a knowledgeable teacher. It's a specialized training to help people with various conditions and ailments. And so you should really find out, you know, about your teacher and who their teacher is and if they're still studying, because actually yoga is a science and it keeps progressing. Every year when I go back to my teachers, they've progressed. You know, in terms of their study of the human body. And I forgot the second part of her question.
She was wondering about stress.
Well, you know, people talk about stress management all the time, and to me that's an oxymoron because you can't really manage stress. Stress is there in our life on a daily basis, and yoga helps you to be present and to, as the previous caller had said, to be able to look inwards into your own self and to be present, not to be thinking of the past, of the future, which can add more stress to your life if you're not living in the moment. So yoga can help you to stay balanced regardless of what stressors are always going to be coming your way, positive ones, negative ones, because even pleasurable experiences can also be a stress. You know, sometimes there's an expression, you pay a price for paradise. So pleasures and pains, in yoga, you are taught to not get attached to those experiences and to live in the moment. And there's also even yoga practices, yoga positions that help you to relax, to recuperate if you've had a stressful day or you've had an illness that is hard on the body. So there's different kinds of practices you do. You don't do the same postures every day. You assess how you feel each day, and depending on how you feel, if you're okay, you can do an active practice. But if you're tired, if you're fatigued, if you're overcoming an illness, you do a more recuperative practice.
Now, you've talked in answering these first two callers' questions about different teachers and yourself as a teacher. Since this time of year on WILL AM, we have a fairly limited listening audience, fairly close to Champaign-Urbana after sundown. Tell us who some of the other teachers are in the Champaign-Urbana area who teach yoga. I know Morris Knapp, K-N-A-P-P, has taught yoga at the Y, University of Y, for years.
Mm-hmm.
Who else teaches yoga in this area besides yourself and Morris?
You know, I've known Morris from way back when I started. He was here at the Y, I think, way back then. I don't really know much about what he's doing right now or who his teacher is. I know he actually took class from me once. There's a living yoga center, and I don't actually know who their teachers are.
Yeah. But there are several different teachers, even locally, even in Champaign-Urbana, and in large metropolitan areas, there would be...
Oh, there's a million.
Yeah, just many, many choices. How does someone who wants to be a student, who wants to take a class, who wants to learn the practice of yoga, how do they evaluate who the teachers are and where to start?
Well, actually, there's a whole system, a certification system, at least within the Iyengar method, and it's actually considered the gold standard of there's a yoga alliance where you can register to be a yoga teacher, but that's just a registration, and they actually used our standards to set their standards because ours are so high. At least, and I know my system the best, and I admit I'm an Iyengar yoga snob. I've been studying it for over 25 years, and I'm very involved in, making high quality teachers. We have a whole association, and we have a certification system, and people who sit for the first level. There's actually 12 levels.
Now that phrase is interesting. Who sit?
They sit, they take a written exam, they have to show a demonstrated practice, and they have to show their teaching over a three-day period. It's very grueling, actually, and some of them take a minimum of 5 years to prepare for just the first level.
Now, as someone who themselves have sat for a PhD oral exam, how's it compare?
I actually never did this exam because I've been in the system very long. I'm one of the assessors, and my teacher has awarded me an advanced level certificate. Mm-hmm. So once you reach that level, you have to keep up your practice and your study. There are certain requirements to maintain it. but from what I know, because I do train teachers, it is a pretty intense process, and it's highly stressful. And so they have to do a recuperative practice, I'm sure, when they're undergoing it. But they all say that, for the most part, that they learn a lot from it, and they're ready to go on to the next level to help to develop themselves into better teachers and better students of yoga.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Dr. Lois Steinberg about the practice of yoga. And Lois Steinberg has a PhD in nutritional science. That was from the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And before that was a mental health specialist and has been teaching yoga since she was quite young. If you'd like to ask her a question or make a comment about yoga, please call us. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455, and we have several local lines. So even if you hear someone on that line, you can still use it to wait in line. And if you're calling from farther away, there's a toll-free number you may use. Just punch in 1-800-222-9455. And we do have listeners, of course, on the Internet that can be reached at WILL.UIUC.EDU. And then going to Focus 580.
Steve, can I make a comment about that previous caller who said they had MS? I just want to say further about that. MS is a degenerative type of disease, and there's different varieties of it. And there's other diseases of this nature. And we refer to these conditions as heating kind of conditions, where somebody who has this kind of condition should be careful that they don't overheat the body, because it's not good for their condition, and that we actually have special ways to work with people to do what are called cooling poses, and to work with the bone and not necessarily the muscle, so it doesn't waste them more. So I just wanted to get back to that caller, because I didn't think I fully answered their question.
Thank you. We'll be getting back to Lois Steinberg in just a moment, but let me take a minute here, since we're about halfway through our program. We're talking about the practice of yoga. Next week, Rabbi Norman Klein, who is returning from Israel this coming Thursday, Rabbi Klein will be on this program next Sunday afternoon at 5 Central Time. He'll be talking about the current situation in Israel. On November 30th, here on Keeping the Faith, Tim Maynard will be our guest, talking about the power of prevention. Tim is the director of the local Boy Scouts. Reverend Alex Gehrman will be our guest December 7th from the Unitarian Universalist Church, and he'll be talking about the current debate on traditional religious language. Barry Schweitzer will be talking about Jewish education on December 14th, and those are some of the guests we'll be here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Hope you can listen and perhaps call in with comments or questions. Support for Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the U of I. It was started 130 years ago by students. And over these many decades, and indeed over a century, the Y has been helping develop student compassion and appreciation for public service by giving them opportunities for social action and service. One of the examples is the Alternative Spring Break Program, where over 200 University of Illinois students now go over fall break and over Christmas break and over spring break and do service projects all around this country. The Y has been involved with these kind of programs, as well as helping start Students for Environmental Concerns years ago and many other programs. One of the programs coming up soon at the Y is an International Film Series program, a free film at the Y, Friday, December 5th. The classic Black Orpheus will be at the Y at 7:47 p.m., Friday, December 5th. Since the Y is a charitable institution and receives no money from the government or from the University of Illinois' budget, we do encourage people to consider making donations to the Y, that we may continue our programs with students. And one way we're doing that is by encouraging people to consider donating an automobile, a truck, a van, an SUV to the Y. If you have a vehicle you want to trade in or get rid of, why not consider getting a tax deduction if you itemize by donating that vehicle to University Y. You may call us to find out about this at 217-337-1500 during the week. And we do this all ourselves. There's no third-party costs, and the car may end up in the hands of a grateful international student or other graduate student. So that's a little bit about the Y. Incidentally, we're looking for teachers for our Communiversity series. We mentioned Morris Knapp and his courses on yoga at the Y. Many other courses are taught at the Y, and we're looking for teachers for next semester, starting in January and February. If there's something you'd like to teach, something you know about, and you can get paid for this a little bit, so do consider checking out the Y website at universityymca.org and looking for Communiversity. Okay, we have a couple callers waiting with questions for Lois Steinberg. Let's go to line one. You're on the air.
Yes, I haven't heard the totality of the program, but I understand that yoga has to do with turning inward and looking at the self and quieting the mind. But I was wondering how that relates to some larger entity or larger self, you know, how the microcosm relates to maybe a macrocosm, the environment, whether it's the natural environment or the mental environment or the political environment.
Good question.
You know, yoga is not just the practicing of postures, and yes, it does make you sensitive and brings your mind inwards and makes you a better person, and therefore, as you become a better person, you set a good example for others around you, and you are very much involved in the world. The other practices of yoga, actually, this is a good question because I did want to say this, are moral observances of nonviolence, non-stealing, non-covetousness, chastity, and truthfulness. And there's also what we call restraints, cleanliness, contentment, self-study of the self or the ancient texts, and burning desire and heat. And this needs a little bit of explanation. The moral observances are universal, and these are actually practices of yoga. and the restraints, the cleanliness is not just that you keep your body clean, but that your words, your thoughts, your actions are pure in the sense that, you know, it doesn't, you know, what you say won't bring heat to somebody else or to harm somebody. And these are actually the most important practices of yoga. It's not just what you're doing when you're standing on your feet and aligning your body. You're aligning your mind and you're being very aware of these moral observances and restraints and, you know, in your everyday life. So, you know, as a student of yoga, you practice these things even more sincerely, having been made aware of them. And I think if everybody practiced yoga, the world would be a better place. It makes you a better person, and it makes other people around you better people.
We have another caller waiting, but before we get to them, let me ask a skeptical question about what you just said. How can you be both truthful, one of the moral observances of the practice of yoga, and show restraint? For example, what do you think of my posture?
I'd have to ask you to stand up.
See, but did you see the problem? How do you be kind to me if I have bad posture, you know, and yet truthful?
You know, yoga, when you come into a yoga class, it doesn't necessarily mean that the teacher's going to be kind to you. That's not necessarily going to develop you. It can be very intense and very demanding. I am very demanding of my students. And I will say, okay, Steve, come on, lift your chest up, widen your collarbones, and so you can breathe better. It's not just the skeletal and the muscular awareness. It's actually affecting your organs, how you're stooping. So if I'm kind to you and just tap you on your shoulder and say, oh, too bad about your posture, why don't you lift a little here or there, I will shout and scream at you instead to make you stand up and open your chest so you can breathe. So I also mentioned there's something called tapas, which means heat. And so, you know, this burning desire also has to be practiced as a restraint.
So I would be paying you to shout at me. Well, let's go to the person who's online, too. Yes, you're on the air with our guest, Lois Steinberg. Go ahead, please.
I'm laughing because it's... Well, anyway, I have you comment on cure that you cannot endure and endure which you cannot cure. Can you comment on that? And also give a little bit of explanation about nutrition, and I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say. Thanks.
You're welcome. you know, I don't use conventional medicine as my first line of defense, and people who practice yoga ultimately learn that there's certain sequences of poses strung together that can help you with things. And a very simple example is you have a headache. You know, and you learn to try to analyze how you got that headache, why you have it, and then you can figure out what kind of sequence of poses you can do to reduce the headache. For example, actually, I was just rear-ended in a car, and
sorry.
I immediately, no, it's actually okay because I used yoga, and I got this whiplash, and I also had the headache, and I knew from the snapping of my spine that my headache was there, so I immediately did a yoga posture where you actually weight the muscles of the body with some sandbags, and you're lying down in a certain position to let the muscles let go. The headache was still there, so I did another posture after that to reduce the headache. It was completely gone. You know, in my everyday life, and I teach my students this, you know, how to use the yoga to help you with these common things. Now, there's other conditions that you may not have any control over, and you have to learn to accept this. And the yoga can still be used to help you go on, to continue on. So say you have arthritis. It can be a very debilitating, wretched disease, and you have to stay ahead of it. So you actually have to have a very rigorous yoga practice where you are working in such a way that you're putting the disease a little bit behind you, and you can keep up ahead. I've also had the experience of working with three people I can think of right now in the end stages of terminal illness. And it even improved the quality of their life up until the very end. So there are things that, you know, we have no control over, yet yoga, the practices of yoga can help you to endure these things.
When you talk about the practice of yoga, you said that it's not merely postures and poses and sequences of postures, but it's also these practices that deal with truthfulness and chastity, and I forget mm-hmm. the others you mentioned, but and certain restraints. Is that what you're talking about, being helping it, you become a better person? There are moral teachings, or do the postures, the physical things, actually help you do moral, have better moral character, or
it goes,
moral practice?
It goes both ways. Actually, there's what's known as eight limbs of yoga, the moral observances, the ethical restraints, the asana, the postures, the pranayamic breathing exercises, something called pratyahara, which is withdrawal of the senses to their source, dharana, which is concentration. These are Sanskrit terms that I've slipped into. I apologize. Dhyana, which is meditation, and samadhi, which is absorption with the divine. These are eight limbs of yoga. They can all be practiced in the asana and the breathing exercise, the breathing exercises, in the sense that just on a very simple level, when you're doing a yoga posture, are you going at it in such a way that you're hurting yourself? You know, are you being violent to yourself? And how does that translate then to how you approach things outside of the practice, that then it makes you more aware of what you're doing outside of the practice? So all these limbs of yoga are interconnected and can be practiced within the physical postures as well as the breathing exercises.
You mentioned the divine. This is sounding like it's sliding over into a specific religion.
It's not a specific religion. Again, you know, yoga can't be it can't be termed as a specific, you know, religious practice, but it is. It's a religiosity in the sense that you do it every day. It's a philosophy that's practiced. It's a way of life, and yes, there is this. You don't have to believe in the divine, whoever that is for you, but it does. Include devotion to, you know, a higher consciousness or the cosmic vastness that's out there that we are all one and part of. And getting back to how we began the program on a very sad note, when there are horrible things that happen in the world and that affect us all, especially in my classes with my regular students, we will, you know, at the end of class, sit quietly and in our quiet state that we came to from the practice, think together of, you know, lessening human suffering on the planet. But that's not necessarily religious practice. It's something that anybody can do.
Why don't you demonstrate that silence for us here? Oh, no, this is radio. I'm sorry.
Ah, so you're a jokester. Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's great.
For callers, we have time for one or two more callers, probably. 333-9455 is the number, Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455. Let me ask the scientific question. You've got a PhD in nutrition. You know the scientific method. You're living in the 21st century in a major university research university town. How do you know any of this is true?
That's a great
question. People
have
their own experiences, and has yoga been studied scientifically?
Actually, it has, but let me get to the more esoteric part of it. Sure. It's a science that has a 5,000-year history of anecdotal evidence, and that's a lot of anecdotal evidence that has built up over the years. And now conventional science is catching up, and the National Institute of Health has the Department of Complementary and Alternative Medicine, of which they do give money for research projects such as mind-body therapies, and yoga is one of them. And I'm actually waiting to hear back on a project that we're doing on chronic low back pain and Iyengar yoga, which we did a pilot study for. It's getting published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal that I can't remember the name of right now. And there's other Iyengar yoga teachers that have worked with medical doctors who have published in the New England Journal of Medicine on Iyengar yoga and use in carpal tunnel syndrome and osteoarthritis and the hands. There's a project, a long-term project that NIH has funded on MS, actually, and Iyengar yoga specifically, and also memory in the elderly. So it is happening right now. There hasn't been money for it. We only have that 5,000-year-old anecdotal evidence. But there are some published studies, such as the ones I've mentioned and ones going on. And I've got a couple in the fire on chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and also high blood pressure and overweight people. It's happening. And it's going to be good because I know this stuff works and it's being measured. And so the science is catching up. And there's nothing wrong with anecdotal evidence, especially when you have so much of it. And that's what's most powerful to people. And being a researcher in my past academic life, conventional science is not all that clean.
I want to get to our two callers waiting, but two quick questions. Can you take a yoga class individually, or is it always with a group?
Well, you can do private lessons, or you can do group instruction.
And what if you're embarrassed about the way your body looks? How do you deal with that in a class?
Well, you know, I actually do have some specialized classes. We have a problem in this culture of people being overweight, and I actually have a yoga class specifically for people who are overweight. We call it Yoga for Plus Size. I also have a class specifically for men who tend to be stiffer. People have this idea you have to be flexible to join a yoga class, and that's not true. In fact, I like the stiff people. The flexible people are harder to teach because they don't feel anything. The stiff people feel things and they learn fast. And but I do find that men are a little bit stiffer, and we have a special class for them.
Yeah, so you can take classes just for males or just for females?
Both. I also have a class for women, you know, in different conditions that women have.
Great. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yeah, I had two quick questions. How much does it cost to take the yoga classes? And the second question is, on an average, how long does it take for a person to become a better person by practicing yoga?
Okay, well, we charge $12 to drop in for one class. We have a semester fee. We have 12-week fall and spring semesters that give you a two-class discount, so it's $120. We have 8-week winter and summer fees sessions that, you know, would be less, and we're starting, there's a Tuesday night 7:30 to 9 p.m. class that starts December 2nd for introductory level, and if you enroll in that, hopefully you'll become a better person right after that class. You go in, you feel lousy from the day or whatever, you're tired and hear somebody making demands on you, but everyone at the end of class feels better. So you reach, even though we're working with the physical outer layers of the body, there's different layers of the body, and you do get to what we call the bliss layer, where you just feel good after class, and if you feel good, you're a better person after that first class. Now, you have to practice every day to get that feeling. That feeling won't last just from that one class. It might last till the next day, maybe 2 days if you're lucky. But you do have to develop a practice. And in class, we teach you how to develop that. We just ask you to practice two poses for 2 minutes. We make it simple, building up slowly so you don't set yourself up for failure.
I want to get to our second caller quickly, but truthfulness, which I've learned is an important yoga principle, means that I have to say that you can take a 6-week class at the Y in yoga for $55.
Okay.
Starting next next semester. Let's go to the next caller on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. Hi. I was diagnosed with colon cancer in February, and I was told by a friend of mine that know your business fairly well that you guys had a special type of program and that yoga was beneficial to cancer, and I wanted to know if you could quickly touch on any information about that.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you, you know, have been diagnosed with colon cancer, and I don't take new students who come to yoga in the midst of this new diagnosis and the treatment, I ask them to wait till after their treatment is over and work with them then. It's too much to add into, what's happening. If they're my own student and, you know, and they've been with me and they've been diagnosed, I will work with them right away, and I do have a special class for that they can come to.
So a radiation treatment, for example, would be so debilitating and it'd be difficult to take on the new learning that yoga requires.
Yeah, and it, you know, and a lot of, you know, people when they get diagnosed with cancer, I think they get a lot of different things from people saying, oh, you should do this, you should do that, and I just don't think it's appropriate at that time. Just go through the treatment, and if you're still interested, you know, after you finish the chemotherapy, I can take you then. You know, I talked about heating and cooling conditions. Cancer is another heat generating disease, and you really have to go to a knowledgeable teacher so that you know you're not adding to that heat and wasting the body. Chemotherapy and radiation also, you know, for every cancer cell they take a healthy cell with it. So it's also a heating treatment even. So that's a double whammy. And you have to really, know what you're doing when you're, go to a knowledgeable teacher when you have this condition. People have to do what are called cooling poses even for a full year after the treatment is over.
We're talking with Lois Steinberg about the practice of yoga. She has a PhD in nutrition from the University of Illinois and has been a yoga teacher for 25 years?
Is that well, close? Over already, since the dawn of man at this point.
Even longer. Let me ask kind of just a smart aleck question. You've studied psychology, you've studied nutritional science, you've studied yoga. How close are you to perfection?
That's not something that I can really answer. I hope that's not what I'm working towards. As I said earlier, in terms of that yoga's not a religion, but it makes you to culture yourself to a better life. Yoga is about enlightenment and making yourself a better person. And so, basically in yoga, you learn to become more of a discriminating individual in terms of, right ways of thinking based on fact and not based on fiction, and that you are content given whatever lot you have been given in this life, and to practice compassion and friendliness and joy so you have a graceful disposition. And these are actually aphorisms from the Yoga Sutras that I had talked about earlier. And I do find that studying of the sutras helps me to be a better person and be content, and not to work on perfectionism. That's something that can drive people crazy.
Okay. In asking that question, it's one way to get into the interesting issue of what is yoga trying to cure, or what are the temptations that a practitioner of yoga has to deal with?
Most people come to yoga because they want to make something better. Most people come to yoga because they don't come to yoga because they want to learn yoga. That comes later. The interest has to be sparked, to learn about yoga. Most people come to yoga because of condition, some kind of disease, even a natural condition as pregnancy. Some women might become pregnant and say, oh, I should do yoga now so I have a healthy pregnancy. So people come for that reason at first, and hopefully that will spark the interest in yoga, the study of yoga itself, and then you can carry on the study of it throughout life. And I'm not sure I answered your question.
Well, I didn't ask it very well. Let me try again. I would think that there'd be times when you just want to slump on your couch, and you'd know better. You'd know you should be sitting up so you're breathing better, or that you should be in some other posture. But how do you deal with that? I mean, surely, that comes to people.
I slump on my couch.
Or people who want to, you've said several times, you need to do this every day. I mean, I can't do anything every day. I'm not that disciplined.
Well, that's why I set up just doing one or two poses. And I do say that if you only do these, you can call yourself a yoga practitioner because you are doing something mm-hmm. that's actually helping the circulation in your body, just two simple poses. And to make it, you know, part of your routine, like when you get up in the morning, you know, you brush your teeth, you go to the toilet, you know, have a bath, and then you do two poses. So you're brushing your body.
Tell us about one.
Well, one is called Legs Up the Wall. It's in Sanskrit, it's called Urdhva Prasarita Padasana. And it where you take your legs up the wall and you spread your look at your feet, you see that between the that you align the center line of your body.
Now wait, are you standing?
You're lying on your back.
Lie on your back.
And your legs are up the wall. And if you can't get all the way to touch the wall, you can be slightly away from the wall. So as long as your knees are straight, you don't have to be touching the wall completely because you may not be flexible enough to do that. You follow? The backs of the legs are on the wall.
Okay.
Your back is on the floor. And then you tighten your knees and thighs, you spread your toes, you lift the inner edges of your feet up, the outer sides of the feet down. That takes excess fluid out of your ankles. It's actually good for sprained ankles. It's also good for the knees, and it opens up the backs of the legs, which tend to get very tight. Then you extend your arms overhead in such a way that you're opening the chest and releasing the abdomen to the back body. So it actually is affecting the digestive system, making it toned, and to opening of the chest to help the capacity of the lungs, the heart, the liver, the gallbladder. Yoga actually affects the organs. That's how it's different than exercise. So just doing that simple pose on a very simple level will help you also to keep your hips open and your shoulders open. Most people have problems in their neck and shoulders, their lower back, and their knees. And this pose helps all those things.
For our last 30 seconds, yoga on TV.
You need a teacher. You have to have a teacher. People say, oh, they know yoga. They've done it with a video. You've got to have a teacher who's knowledgeable. And your teacher still has to have a teacher who that they continually study with. Finding a teacher is the best thing. But if you don't have that, okay, fine. Just do it. It's better than not doing it at all.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Lois Steinberg. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Steve.
Teacher in Champaign-Urbana. What phone number may people use to, if they have other questions about yoga for you?
They can call 344-9642, and we also have a website, www.yoga-cu.com.
Thank you for being on Keeping the Faith. Next week, Rabbi Norman Klein, who is coming back from Israel on this Thursday, will be our guest. So next Sunday from 5 to 6 here on WILL. Rabbi Norman Klein talking about the current situation in Israel. And just another reminder that at Sinai Temple this week, in response to the tragic bombings of the two synagogues in Turkey over this weekend, there will be an interfaith service. Communities encouraged to come at 7:30 to Sinai Temple at the corner of Duncan and Windsor Road in Champaign. That's this coming Friday evening. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I'm director of the University YMCA. Thank you for listening again this week to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boat Works, Champaign; Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur; and Bodywork Associates in Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Phil Harvey gives away tens of millions of dollars every year to fight AIDS and promote family planning in such places as India, Brazil, Vietnam, and Ethiopia. Where does the money come from? Harvey runs the largest mail-order erotica business in the world. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the man dubbed the hardcore philanthropist. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at 7 on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a chance of drizzle and areas of fog. The low in the lower 40s with south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. The high in the lower 60s with southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, occasional showers and thunderstorms, breezy with the low in the mid-50s and south winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next. Okay, you know.